So, Prabhupada, want these special days like Janmashtami and Varasami, Shri Radha Maharaja, Mahamahotsava Ki Jai, to be honored and celebrated specifically. It's very interesting that in the West, we're very superstitious about walking under ladders on Friday the 13th and black cats going in front of our paths, but we have so many auspicious days, two Ekadasis every month, plus days like Janmashtami, Radhashtami, the appearance days of Lord Chaitanya, Lord Vishnu, Lord Rama, and so on. They're very auspicious and very wonderful. So, one of the things we want to do this morning is read some things that Prabhupada commented on, and some of the verses in Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami wrote in Chaitanya Chaitanya about the qualities of Radharani. Radharani has many wonderful qualities. We're going to talk about some of them. And they're enumerated in some of the literature that Prabhupada has produced. One of them is Chaitanya Chaitamrita. And I'm going to read briefly from the 23rd chapter of the Madhya-lila. These are verses 87 through 91, describing the qualities of Radharani. These verses are found in the Ujjalini-lamani by Sri Radha Prabharana and Prabhupada Bhosana and Sturport. This is the translations of these verses. Srimati Radharani's 25 chief transcendental qualities are: 1. She is very sweet. 2. She is always freshly youthful. 3. Her eyes are restless. 4. She smiles brightly. 5. She has beautiful, auspicious lines. 6. She makes Krishna happy with her bodily aroma. 7. She is very expert in singing. 8. Her speech is charming. 9. She is very expert in joking and speaking pleasantly. 10. She is very humble and meek. 11. She is always full of mercy. 12. She is cunning. 13. She is expert in executing her duties. 14. She is shy. 15. She is always respectful. 16. She is always calm. 17. She is always brave. 18. She is expert in enjoying life. 19. She is situated at the topmost level of ecstatic love. 20. She is the reservoir of loving affairs in Gokula. 21. She is the most famous of the submissive devotees. 22. She is very affectionate to elderly people. 23. She is very submissive to the love of her friends. 24. She is the chief gopi. 25. She always keeps under her control Krishna. In short, she possesses unlimited transcendental qualities, just as Lord Krishna does. Sometimes it's said that it's remarkable that Krishna doesn't, that there's no mention of Radharani in the Srimad Bhagavatam, where there are many mentions of Krishna. The Srimad Bhagavatam, in fact, is all about Krishna. So there's a verse that Prabhupada writes very interesting purport to in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in which Radharani is mentioned, although it's a slightly unusual use of the Sanskrit terminology. I'm going to read what Prabhupada wrote about it. So this is the verse. This is in the 10th canto, and it's attributed to Swami speaking, 30th chapter, 28th verse. And this is the way the Sanskrit reads. Anaya rahito is the first word. Anaya rahito nuna. And Prabhupada translates these words as follows: anaya by her, anaya meaning by her, and aradita, perfectly worshipped. So it reads, anaya radito nunam bhagavan harir ishvara yano vihaya govinda pritoyam anaya tadha. And this is the translation rendered by Srila Prabhupada. Certainly this particular gopi has perfectly worshipped the all-powerful personality of Godhead, Govinda, since he was so pleased with her that he had abandoned the rest of us and brought her to a secluded place. I'll read that again. Certainly, this particular gopi has perfectly worshipped the all-powerful personality of Godhead, Govinda, since he was so pleased with her that he abandoned the rest of us and brought her to a secluded place. You know, read the purport. This purport and the verse are actually not read by Prabhupada, by his disciples. And there was Vidyananda Maharaj and Gopi Puranadana, they headed up a team of the translators. So they've written a purport that goes like this. Sri Vishwanath Chakravarti explains that the word Arahita refers to Srimati Radharani. He comments, the same Shukadeva Goswami, this is a quote, the same Shukadeva Goswami has tried with all endeavor to keep her name hidden, but now it automatically shines forth from the moon of his mouth. That he has spoken her name is indeed her mercy. And thus the word Arahita is like the rumbling of a kettle drum sounded to announce her great good fortune, end quote. I'll read that again. Saint Shukadeva Goswami has tried with all endeavor to keep her name hidden, but now it automatically shines forth from the moon of his mouth. That he has spoken her name is indeed her mercy. And thus the word Arahitaha is like the rumbling of a kettle drum sounded to announce her great good fortune. And the purport continues. Although the gopis spoke as if jealous of Srimati Radharani, they were actually ecstatic to see that she had captured Sri Krishna. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti quotes the following detailed description of Srimati Radharani's footprints as given by Srila Rupa Goswami in his Sri Ujjalam Nilamani. At the base of the large toe, her left foot, is the mark of a barley corn. Below that mark is a disc. Below the disc is an umbrella, and below the umbrella is a bracelet. The vertical line extends from the middle of her foot to the juncture of her large and second toes. At the base of the middle toe is a lotus. Below that is a flag with a banner, and below the flag is a creeper together with a flower. At the base of her small toe is an elephant goat, and upon her heel is a half moon. Thus there are 11 marks on her left foot. At the base of the large toe on her right foot is a conch shell, and below that, a sphere. At the base of the small toe of her right foot is a sacrificial altar. Below that, an earring. And below that, the earring, and below the earring, a sphere. Along the base of the second, third, fourth, and small toes is the mark of a mountain, below which is a chariot, and on the heel is a fish. Thus, all together, there are 19 distinguishing marks on the soles of Srimati Radharani's feet. So if anyone says that Radharani is not mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam, this is proof that it is mentioned in the Bhagavatam. It's customary, as many of you know, in Vrindavan, the Radharani is used as a form of address. And sometimes when people pass one another, they call it a Hey Radhe, Hey Radhe. Also, I think some of you know that graffiti is something of an art in at least in parts of India. Paintings of words on walls sometimes are beautifully crafted letters with different colors. And Mahanidhi Prabhu, Mahanidhi Maharaj, I think he's written about this in one of his books, but he told me this about an incident that happened when there was an elderly man who was something of a, I guess you'd call him a graffiti artist. He was always seen with a bucket of paint and a brush, and he was painting the name of Radharani around Vrindavan. So the history of this is that he had become a little sad because people in Vrindavan some years ago had stopped calling out Hey Rod Hey. Instead of saying Hey Rod Hey, they were saying things like, how's it going? Or Aragon? Or should we write? Did you get a fax? Or did you see my email from yesterday? And things like that. They weren't saying Hey Rod Hey. So this man began to lament that things were changing in a bad way. So, as was narrating to me. This man was very sad about this changing state of affairs. And one day, after he went to sleep, he had a dream that a man came to him and said that if you can somehow reverse the situation and get people to start saying Radhe again, maybe you have to paint your name all over Vrindavan. But if you can do that, it would be a very wonderful thing. So the next day, he met a very unusual person from Delhi, who was a wealthy man. And the man told him, I know you're a very poor person. It was kind of a serendipitous that they happened to meet. It was a very rare thing that they happened to meet up. And he said, is there any particular thing you want? Thinking that he would ask for money. So I'm very sad over the fact that people aren't saying Sri Radhe when they meet each other in Vrindavan, it's their land, and she's the queen of Vrindavan, it's a queen. So he said, I think that the way I could remedy this situation, this is what the poor man said, by painting the word Sri Radhe or Sri Radha everywhere on tree trunks, on walls, on the sides of buildings, all over Vrindavan. So the man said to him, so if you can do this, I will supply you paint until the day you die. So he brought buckets and buckets of paint, and the man started painting. And as late as 1966, I saw this man painting. And he's written in Krishna, Radha Krishna, with blue internal letters representing Krishna and the golden yellowish orange letters representing complexion of Radharani on the outside. He's written Radha Krishna all over Vrindavan, on walls, on tree trunks, on the plinths of the trees that are cement stairways, on the sides of buildings, and they're very beautiful. So what people in the West consider an annoyance that somebody has defaced public property, you see very beautiful names of Radharani written all over Vrindavan, and every once in a while, I don't know if he's still alive or not, but this very succinctly looking aged man of a Rajabasi painting very painstakingly and very artistically the names of Sri Radha and Krishna around Vrindavan. Radharani has, in addition to these qualities, she very mercifully appears in many of our temples, and usually with the mudra of her right hand raised, meaning that she's blessing everyone who sees her, and she's recommending everyone who sees her to Krishna, please accept this nice boy or girl in your service. This is the blessing I'm giving. And then sometimes we see her with another kind of mudra, where she's sometimes the garland she put on the deity of Radharani, and she's offering this garland to Krishna, or it's a garland that's being supposed to be offered to Krishna. So it's a very wonderful thing to honor Radharani, because after all, she controls Krishna. There's another incident that Dina Bandhu, he's an American by birth, but he's now, I think, Vrindavasi. He's lived there for the last 20 years or so. There's a hill around the Parikram Pass that you've seen, Dvasaditya Hill, it's called, on which is situated the temple of Madan Mohan, established by Sanat Goswami. And right next to that Madan Mohan temple is the place where Krishna jumped into the Yamuna River to dance on the woods of Kaliya. So in the sense, and he purified that part of the Yamuna, which had become very polluted because of Kaliya. So in one sense, he was one of the first, if not the first, environmentalists to live on this planet. He dove from a very ancient tree, which you can still see. And it's right near that hill, Vasa Nichatila. Dasa means 10, and Vadasa refers to 12. And the story is that after Krishna jumped into the Yamuna to do away with Kaliya, or get get Kaliya to surrender to him. He asked on truth from Kaliya, and it was a way of Kaliya surrendering to Krishna's feet, because Krishna places lotus feet on Kaliya's head. Krishna was shivering cold, having jumped into the Jamuna, so the sons headed to dry him off. And it's called one Dasa Dityantila Hill, because 12 sons came out, not one son, but 12. And the hill is named after the fact that 12 sons came out to dry Krishna. And at this place, one of the names of Radharani is, as you know, Mana Mana Mohana Mohini, which means she who attracts Cupid, because Mana Mohana is another name for Cupid. Mohana meaning illusion, and Mana Mohana is Mana meaning illusion, and Mohana is another name for Krishna. So it's another name for Cupid. Sometimes Krishna was Cupid, but then Krishna sometimes manifests himself separately. So he decided to see if he could allure Krishna in his separate incarnation. So Cupid has arrows. You see pictures of Cupid sometimes with a bow and arrow. So the arrows he has are the arrows of touch, taste, smell, sight, and sound, the five senses. So he gazed at Krishna and aimed his arrows at Krishna. He could fire five arrows at once, very empowered being. And sighting Krishna, gazing upon him, he became overwhelmed with ecstasy and fainted. He couldn't fire a single arrow. That's how Mana Mohana was fooled by Krishna, or was overpowered by Krishna, you might say. So many wonderful things happen. And then this very same person, Krishna, who is the attractor of everything, is controlled by Mana Mohana Mohini, by Radharani, by her love, because she is said to be the topmost of the gopis, the one who has the most, and Lord Chaitanya has written that the most perfect form of worship is to be in the mood of the gopis. And of all the gopis, Radharani is the foremost and the chief of them. So today we're very blessed to have Radharani's mercy and to be able to honor her. And therefore we're only fasting for half a day instead of a whole day. And we're very honored to have been able to offer Abhishek to Radha and Krishna today. So if there's anything further someone would like to say or add or ask, how's the time? Yes.
I wonder if the reference to Shurakai in the Bhagavad Gita is a very male reference. Then where do we learn that? Where is that?
Well, the basis is our Sampradaya, Prabhupada, and Vishnu Chakravarti, Rupa Swami, and Sanatana Goswami, and Vishnu Chakravarti have commented on works like Shukadeva Goswami's, who's a speaker of the Bhagavatam, and they've given us the inner, deeper meanings of those things, because it is a rather veiled reference, and it's only through the mercy of the disciplic succession that we're able to understand what the real meaning of these mantras are. They're not just words that we can study and learn Sanskrit or Bengali from or memorize, but they actually have a deeper meaning, a meaning that's relevant, a way that we can understand how they apply to our life today. They're not just words or books in a library. They're gathering dust in the section room shelves. But it's a living philosophy. And so we rely on people that are in the Sampradaya to bring the real meaning, the depth of meaning, of things that Shukadeva Goswami has spoken, things that Vyasadeva has written, to make it meaningful to us. So in one sense, we can understand Vyasa, who is a great author, although he's, in one sense, more of a compiler than an author, because there are the Itihasas, there are the Puranas, there are the Vedas, and then he compiled many books. But there's an inner meaning of what he compiled, and we can get a sense of what he did when we look at how Prabhupada translated so much literature, including purports, the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the Srimad Bhagavatam, and many other books, the Vedashamrita, the Nectar of Devotion, and many other books. We can get a sense of how someone like Vasudeva could compile so many literatures, and how someone like Jiva Goswami, who is sometimes said to be the leading scholar of Vedic literature, having compiled nearly 500,000 different verses, having written, composed that many verses himself, that's Jiva Goswami. Jiva wasn't even not very, very old in history, maybe 450 years ago was Jiva Goswami. And when I was in London, the School of Oriental Studies, Oriental and African Studies, part of London University, characterized him as being the leading, the most prolific Oriental scholar in the world. So it's not only that they're recognized by universities like the London School of Oriental and African Studies and Oxford and so on, but they have and they've enriched the theological knowledge of the world, but they have a certain depth of understanding that makes the writings relevant to the way we live today. And in one sense, we're very obliged to Srila Prabhupada, who has taken these very old literatures like the Bhagavatam and the Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is written in a kind of Bengali that is so old that even people that today live in Bengal don't understand all of it, just like we don't understand some of the words that Shakespeare used. But the purports give us a sense of what these things really mean to us today. So when we read the Srimad Bhagavatam, when we read the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we look to the acharyas and the disciples in succession to guide us and explain the relevance of them. This is not simply a veiled, disguised way of putting Radharani in the Bhagavatam, but as the purport says, as Vishwanath Chakravarti said, Shukadeva was trying not to mention her, but he could not do it. He was unable to restrain saying the name of this particular Gopi, Radharani. So that's my perspective on this. Yes.
I know from Janmashtami we always hear about Krishna's birth, but we don't really hear very much about Radha's birth.
We not only don't hear much about Radha's birth, we don't hear much about Radha's passing away. There's one place in the Chaitanya Charitamrita where Radharani is asking her gopi friends, I'm sure all of you have read this at least once, to drape her body after it's no longer alive around a tamal tree so that she can be seen as embracing Krishna in her moment of death. So there are many things we don't hear about Radharani. And we never see pictures of Radharani with tilak, for example, on her tilak marking on her forehead. But it's written in the Chaitanya Charitamrita by Srila Prabhupada in one of his reports that the tilak of her good fortune shines from her forehead. So maybe that's another use of the word tilak. I'm not a Sanskrit, so I don't know what all the meanings of tilak may be, but Prabhupada has written that. Even though we don't see a tilak mark on her forehead, somehow she's the emblem of auspiciousness. And we just have to accept that because Prabhupada has written it. I know it sounds like some kind of blind following, but after all, it is a matter of attitude. And it is a kind of blind following. Otherwise, we may become fanatical, overly fanatical. And that happens sometimes. So especially in the West, where people study Vedas, they study Indology, they study things from India, they study India, they study the history of the human race. It's important that we have some philosophical understanding, that we do ask questions, and that because people ask us questions, so we have to know the answers to those questions. The answers to the questions are in the book. The questions themselves are in the books if we read them carefully. And not only read the books, but we talk to people and we hear the questions. Sometimes it's said that teachers, people who are in the teaching profession, are the best students because they're kind of eternal students, because their students always ask new, fresh questions about the subject matter. So that it forces them to go deeper and deeper into the subject matter, to look at it from all angles. There's a quote, I don't know who said it, but the search for truth is something like picking berries. If you approach it from one angle, you're going to miss something. So we know that's true.
But you come here and you hear the word, you have to hear the answer right now, because we're hearing what you're saying. And it's like, what you're saying, it's like it's already there, just we know it from the book, from there. So I always wish to ask a question, but a question is already answered in the interaction.
Well, that's one of the reasons why reading is so important, why Prabhupada recommended it, why it's important for everyone. I think once Prabhupada said that he in Mayapur, that he didn't write the books just so that we could distribute them and get a lot of points and be champions of book distribution, but so we would read them, and read them again and again, because with each reading there's some new thing that we learn. So it's not just a matter of reading them, but not reading them mechanically, but reading them to understand what they mean, to take notes, to probe the depths of this philosophy. It is a very deep philosophy, actually. It is the highest. Okay, thank you very much. Srimati Radharani Ki Jai, Shri Radhasami Mahabhutsa Ki Jai.